We casually raised the simple question of how valuable is a letter a few weeks back. And you are still answering that question with beautiful testimonials of the universal power of the written word addressed to one important person.
Recently, I went through letters I've had over the last 30 years and sent some to my friends because their letters had such poignant stories about what they were going through with their kids, with their spouses, or their divorce. And it was very, very precious.
My mother died 3 weeks ago. Going through her things, I found a letter that she wrote to me a long time ago when I was in college. And it starts off by apologizing because we were so poor and I was working full time. She apologized that she couldn't help me out financially. She offered a lot of words of encouragement. And she ended the letter this way. She said, "Always remember to love yourself first, and no matter how we might falter or fall, don't stop. Keep on pushing. There will be a reward in the end. Love you always, your mother, Linda." And that is something that I will cherish for the rest of my life.
Thanks to Mary there from New Jersey and Susan before that from Plantation, Florida. All of these great comments made me want to reread some of the great books of letters that are out there in this Twitter-twisted email world. This one from a famous book of letters from Eleanor Pruitt Stewart, a Western homesteader in the 1920s who wrote thousands of letters from her cabin in Colorado. This one to a blind man in Massachusetts named Mr. Zace, conveying what it would be like to be in the mountains but not be able to see them. She wrote, "If you were in our Rockies, the wind on your face would have a different feel. After you were part of the way up, you would feel exhausted but elated at the same time. You could feel that. You would find yourself too weak to stand upright. The muscles in your limbs would ache and feel so weakened that you would sink to the ground, but you would be ecstatic, joyful." The late writer Kurt Vonnegut wrote this to his daughter one time. "Most letters from a parent contain a parent's own lost dreams disguised as good advice. My good advice to you is to pay somebody to teach you to speak some foreign language, to meet with you two or three times a week and talk. Also, get somebody to teach you to play a musical instrument. What makes this advice especially hollow and pious is that I'm not dead yet. If it were any good, I could easily take it myself."
I received a 6-page handwritten letter from my father every week for 20 years. It is a journal of our family's lives, and nothing, no text, no email, can ever take the place of that written history.
My girlfriend lives across the world right now. I'm in South Carolina and she's in Cambodia, and we talk over Skype all the time and we email all the time and we can send each other pictures fairly easily. But when we write each other letters that go through the mail, we put a lot more thought into it, and the thoughts we do put into it are received with a lot more care and love and genuine feeling than anything we get over Skype or over email.
Thanks, Craig in Portland, Oregon, and Dan in Columbia, South Carolina. And Dan, check this letter out. Here's a long-distance relationship, to be sure. "I have amused myself in reading and thinking of my absent friend, sometimes with a mixture of pain, sometimes with pleasure, sometimes anticipating a joyful and happy meeting, whilst my heart would bound and palpitate with the pleasing idea, and with the purest affection I have held you to my bosom, till my whole soul has dissolved in tenderness and my pen fallen from my hand." This bit of a letter from Abigail to John Adams was written in August of 1776. Their correspondence consisted of 1,160 letters that formed an invaluable historical narrative about the beginnings of this country and are a ripping good romantic read even today. We'll have more on John and Abigail's correspondence a little later this hour. And here at The Takeaway, we're collecting your letters. If you have a letter that you cherish, a letter you've written or received, we'd love to feature it on the program. To submit a letter, email us at takeawayletters@gmail.com. Again, that's takeawayletters@gmail.com. Picking up on this discussion of letters and their importance and so many of your letter stories, listen now to activist, farmer, New England know-it-all, opinionated political philosopher, and lover John Adams unburdening himself to his dear Abigail back in 1774, missing her and filled with the frustrations of having to deal with all the knaves and fools in this new not-yet country of America. He wrote, "I will not willingly see blockheads, whom I have a right to despise, elevated above me and insolently triumphing over me, nor shall knavery, through any negligence of mine, get the better of honesty, nor ignorance of knowledge, nor folly of wisdom, nor vice of virtue. I must entreat you, my dear partner, in all the joys and sorrows, prosperity and adversity of my life, to take a part with me in the struggle. I pray God for your good health." A bit of one of the 1,160 letters the Adamses wrote each other. And when you think about it, all letters contain a bit of history.
I have a whole stack of letters that my father wrote to his father during World War II. Every time I read them, I think of that greatest generation and one of the greatest men I ever met. And I thank my grandfather for holding on to those letters and for me being able to have them.
Letters are history. We're collecting your letters, and we're looking at some of the great letter collections down through history. And for certain periods, letters are the gold standard for understanding times and places long ago and far away. Margaret Hogan is managing editor of the Adams Papers at the Massachusetts Historical Society and co-editor of My Dearest Friend, Letters of Abigail and John Adams. Margaret Hogan, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So how important are letters in your work, and how historically valid are the kinds of letters that you find in this treasure trove of the Adams's correspondence?
They're absolutely crucial to my work and to really the work of any historian, particularly of the 18th and 19th centuries. But at almost any time, letters up until really the very recent present, this was the way everyone communicated. This was the only way you could know news of what your loved ones were doing. So we are very indebted to not only those who wrote the letters, but also those who preserved the letters. One of the great things about the Adams family is that they were so committed to keeping their letters. John Adams once told his grandchildren, "Whatever you write, preserve." And it's because those letters were kept that we can now look to them and use them to understand what was going on during the incredible events they were living through.
And this correspondence goes over a period of decades, so you really get a feel for the early history of the United States. How would you distinguish the tone of John Adams' writing and Abigail's writing?
John was a more careful writer. He wrote probably twice as many letters as Abigail did to Abigail, but Abigail's letters were longer and much more emotional. John had a very unfortunate incident in 1775 when some of his letters were captured by the British. And because of that, they were published in a British newspaper in New York City. And this caused him a lot of personal embarrassment. He was caught saying things about his colleagues in the Continental Congress that he shouldn't have been saying, or at least that he didn't want said publicly. And after that, he was always a lot more cautious. He was much less willing to express his warmth and affection and be as emotional as Abigail tended to be in her letters. She was somewhat more forthright that way.
So John Adams had a texting scandal in his political career. What do you know?
He did. Who knew that you could run into that kind of problem in the 18th century as much as you can today?
Maggie, let me read you one of my favorites from John Adams' period as president. This is from Abigail to John, and it gives you a sense of just how busy and really just how tough it must have been to be president back in 1798. This is a letter from Quincy, Massachusetts, to John Adams. He must have been in Washington or something. "This is our Thanksgiving Day," she wrote. "When I look back upon the year past, I perceive many, very many causes for Thanksgiving, both of a public and private nature. I hope my heart is not ungrateful, though sad. It is usually a day of festivity when the social family circle meet together, though separated the rest of the year. No husband dignifies my board, no children add gladness to it, no smiling grandchildren eyes to sparkle for the plum pudding." She's all alone.
She is. John was down in Philadelphia, was the capital at that point. A couple of her children were in Europe, and a couple others were living in the New York City area. And she missed them all. And I think most she missed John. And she spent many Thanksgivings alone, many other holidays, birthdays, anniversaries. And it's really only through the letters that we know how difficult that was for her. We can imagine it. We could have guessed. But it's when she writes those kinds of things that we really get a sense of what was going on in her emotional life.
We're talking to Margaret Hogan, who's the managing editor of the Adams Papers at the Massachusetts Historical Society. We've been asking our listeners to give us their favorite letters that they've received or sent. What's your favorite letter or one of the key letters that you love to talk about from this collection?
I think my favorite letter, one of my favorites, is from the 29th of August, 1776. And Abigail is writing from Boston. She's gone there with her family to be inoculated for the smallpox. And she starts her letter to John, "I have spent the 3 days past almost entirely with you." And by that, she means she spent the day with his letters. And she recounts how she spends her time sitting in her room on a rainy day, just rereading these letters. And I think it really conveys how important they were, both the content of them, but also that letters were physical mementos. They were tangible mementos of this relationship. It wasn't just the content of the letter, but it was the physical letters themselves. This was a time when you didn't have photographs. You might have a portrait, but that was something that was really only available to a very small percentage of the population. Perhaps you'd have a lock of hair of somebody, but the letter was something you could hang on to, and that's what she's doing, and I find that very moving.
Margaret Hogan is managing editor of the Adams Papers at the Massachusetts Historical Society and co-editor of My Dearest Friend, The Letters of Abigail and John Adams. Thanks so much.
Thank you.